Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1068, Socialists for Trump and Hitler, Part 8. This is being recorded on April 9th of the year 2019. I'm going to wrap up this series and this program. There are so many other things going on, but I think with the obvious discontinuity between the fellow who is the driving force behind someone who is at this point in time arguably the most visible and refractory element of the Democratic Party, elevated, by the way, by the very same media that collaborated with the intelligence community and the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., to Deep Six Jim Garrison's investigation into JFK's assassination, as we looked at in our long series of interviews with Jim DeJamio. The driving force, the person in question is AOC, in office roughly 3 months and already dominating headlines. Why? Because that is whom the media have put forth. And the driving force behind her, Sekat Chakrabarty, the multimillionaire from Silicon Valley, Wall Street, and Fort Worth, Texas, who is going around with Subhas Chandra Bose T-shirts. I think it is worth asking some questions. Now, in our last program, we were talking about the events that were taking place in Asia as World War II was drawing to a close. We took a look at the death of John Birch, for whom the John Birch Society is named. He was basically involved with recruiting Axis combatants for Chiang Kai-shek, ultimately for the anti-communist Cold War phalanx. It is, I think, worth contemplating whether perhaps Subhas Chandra Bose was going underground for a similar reason. The official investigation into his death concluded that he did not die in the plane crash as reported, and we have taken a look at some links between the Ananda Marga cult, ostensibly a yoga organization, in reality, I think it would be fair to say, certainly a mind control cult and very possibly a fascist one as well. We took a look at that in AFA program number 7, and we are going to come back to that right now. AFA number 7 was recorded in January of 1985, and I think this is worth contemplating in the context of a Bosean or Bosist post-World War II underground. Note that among the elements against which Ananda Marga was active were the significant communist parties that held forth in many parts of India. India is a highly diverse country, and in a number of its districts or provinces, there are significantly powerful communist parties. For obvious reasons, this would make them targets of intelligence activity, including CIA. I think it is worth contemplating whether the founder of Ananda Marga, Sarkar, a nephew of Subhas Chandra Bose and a man who lived with him for a time when he was active on behalf of the Axis and who has cited his affection for Subhas Chandra Bose, whether perhaps Sir the late Mr. Sarkar was part of a Bosist or Bosean underground is worth contemplating. I would also note that in the general background of the discussion that we have been engaging in about some of the right-wing and fascist connections to the, quote, progressive, unquote, wing of the Democratic Party, including Bernie Sanders, and now AOC, we have seen some not only cults, but also organizations that ostensibly at least we're using yoga. Now, I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing yoga as Nazi. That is most assuredly not the case. As far as everything I can tell, yoga has profound physical and psychological benefits to be conferred upon practitioners. However, we have noted in the past that a gentleman named Niels Buch, who was a Nazi sympathizer, helped to develop many of the techniques of modern yoga. The Nazis themselves, including Heinrich Himmler, sought yoga as a vehicle for de-stressing SS men and concentration camp personnel in particular. And we have noted in connection with the Hindutva fascism of Narendra Modi and the BJP and the RSS, to which Tulsi Gabbard, a prominent member of the Sanders Institute, someone who worked on behalf of Bernie Sanders and who placed Bernie Sanders' name into nomination at the Democratic Convention and was kicked about as Bernie Sanders' prospective vice presidential candidate had he gotten the nomination. This woman, Tulsi Gabbard, is not only very close to and something of an American touch point for Narendra Modi, the BJP, and the RSS, but is also a member of the Hare Krishna cult, which is a fascist mind control cult. Baba Ramdev, whom we looked at in 1018, 1019, and 1020, not only has a company called Patanjali that markets herbal remedies and foods, he also runs a yoga empire of sorts, and he has been very active on behalf of Narendra Modi, the BJP, and elements associated with the RSS. Specifically in light of the fact that yoga definitely is not something that is either violent or fascist, I do think it is worth asking whether perhaps yoga, because of the very benefits that it can confer on people, both physical and psychological, and those are profound, whether perhaps yoga has been seized upon as a vehicle by underground Reich elements, not only to generate profits, but to serve as a cover of sorts for various activities. Because what Ananda Marga appear, Ananda Marg as it is pronounced, it does not appear to be yoga oriented at all, although, yeah, ostensibly yoga, but its activities are very un-yoga-like. As indeed, the SS's activities were un-yoga-like, although Heinrich Himmler had a strong mystical Indian affiliation or affection. He saw his SS as the heirs to the Kshatriya warrior caste, Prabhupada, the guru of the Hare Krishna cult, who was idolized by Tulsi Gabbard, sought to recreate the Kshatriya warrior caste with his Hare Krishna cult. Heinrich Himmler carried around a copy of the Bhagavad Gita. These are all things against which, against the background of which, I think Ananda Marga and its activities need to be viewed. And again, I wonder about a post-World War II Bosean or Bosist underground in India. The following is from AFA program number 7 from January of 1985, and you will hear the voice of my very competent and charming co-host Nip Tuck, whose on-air activities were fundamental to the successful execution of many of the archive shows. Again, from January of 1985, about Ananda Marga with strong links to Subhas Chandra Bose or the milieu of Subhas Chandra Bose.
Okay, this is an article that was originally we read this on One Step Beyond. However, we're going to reread it because it fits right into what we're talking about. This is from the Sunday, August 15th, 1982 edition of the San Jose Mercury News. The headline is Ananda Marga, a deadly mix of yoga, violence, question mark. Subheading is, a cult active on the peninsula says its goals are humanitarian, but others link it to killings around the world. It's by Bernard Bauer, a staff writer for the Mercury. A worldwide sect that runs yoga and meditation classes at a secluded Los Altos Hills house is under investigation by the FBI because it is suspected of engaging in terrorist activities. Publicly, the sect, the Ananda Marga Yoga Society, blends Eastern spiritualism with a wide array of social programs. It operates medical clinics, nursery schools, and food programs for the poor in more than 120 countries, including two sites in Santa Clara County. But there is a darker side to Ananda Marga. Throughout the world, the cult has been connected to violence and bloodshed. The sect's guru, Prabhat Ranjan Sarkar, last name spelled S-A-R-K-A-R, spent 7 years in an Indian jail on charges of murdering six defectors. The conviction was reversed on appeal in 1978. In the interim, seven followers burned themselves to death to protest the guru's prison sentence. Other cultists went on a spree of terrorism aimed at freeing their leader, according to CIA and FBI documents. Among the attacks, an Indian embassy attaché was stabbed in Washington, D.C. An Air India employee was assaulted with a knife in Los Angeles. A brick and a firebomb were thrown through the window of the Air India office in New York City. A police officer and two garbage collectors were killed when the Hilton Hotel in Sydney, Australia, was bombed during a meeting of 12 Commonwealth ministers. Two cultists each were sentenced to 16 years in prison for conspiring to murder Australian right-wing extremist Robert Cameron. Two American cultists were convicted of the attempted murder of an Indian diplomat in the Philippines, one who co-founded the Los Altos Hills Center. One who co-founded the Los Altos Hills Center recently won an acquittal on appeal. A policeman was seriously injured when a bomb exploded in the Air India offices in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. The Indian High Commission office in Canberra, Australia, suffered more than $250,000 in damage from an arson fire. Diplomats and Air India employees in Australia and England were stabbed. In an unrelated 1981 incident, police in Europe are seeking a veteran cult member who allegedly lured a former Ananda Marga monk to Sweden and killed him. Dadaji Dhanashananda, a spokesman for the group's national headquarters in Denver, acknowledged that some terrorist acts attributed to the cult, quote, may have been committed by misguided youth who have no faith in Ananda Marga ideology. But Ananda Marga is an organization directed to service to humanity and raising the spiritual consciousness of everyone, unquote. The current FBI investigation is based in part on reports that Ananda Marga is planning more terrorist activities, according to an agency source who requested anonymity. Quote, we have investigated them in the past for isolated incidents, the FBI source said. We did not investigate them as an organization until recently. Last October, Indian intelligence agencies notified the FBI that Ananda Marga members were planning to cross the California-Mexico border and assassinate Prime Minister Indira Gandhi during the Cancun summit. And during Pope John Paul II's visit to the Philippines last year, police instituted extreme security measures after Ananda Marga reportedly threatened the Pope's life.
Interrupting the narrative here very briefly, of course, we've seen since that Indira Gandhi was indeed assassinated, albeit in India, and immediately afterward, Indian security officials revealed that there was an international plot behind the assassination of Indira Gandhi. We as yet have not heard any direct attribution as to who may have been behind that plot, but at least a clue has to be regarded as at least a clue comes from where the suspects are being sought. London, Norway, West Germany, and Canada, all of whom are Western nations, specifically NATO countries. And it's also worth noting that Ananda Marga was connected with threats against the life of the Pope when he visited the Philippines. Well, of course, we've dealt at extreme length with the shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 1981 on this program, and we have connected that with far-right and specifically Nazi elements, and Nazi elements connected to various Western intelligence agencies, including American. So, interesting that we see Ananda Marga connected with threats against the life of the now deceased Indira Gandhi and also against the life of the so far still living Pope John Paul II.
The U.S. government also has received unconfirmed reports that Ananda Marga, whose membership in the United States has been estimated at 5,000 to 20,000, runs terrorist training camps in California and New York. The State Department has identified similar operations in India. A sect spokesman said the reports are, quote, totally bogus. Yet the FBI considers Ananda Marga to have a high potential for violence. Like other sects, it is based on a strict dogma. Its particular dogma advocates a, quote, one-world government, headed by the cult's leaders. The guru, known to his followers as Baba, or Father, predicts that this plan will succeed and that the cult will rule the world by the year 2005. Quote, they foresee the bringing in of that age through violence, said David Fetcho, an ex-cultist. Quote, it's kind of taken for granted that that will happen, unquote. As a preventative measure, the State Department has banned Sarkar, the guru, from entering this country. Quote, our concern is that his presence here might lead to acts of violence, said an Indian affairs analyst in the department who requested anonymity. No acts of terrorism have been linked to the tax-exempt Los Altos Hills Center, where about 900 disciples have been trained in the group's political and religious beliefs. In fact, Ananda Marga denies any role in the violence attributed to the organization. Rather, spokesmen stress its social welfare programs and the letters of commendation the organization has earned around the world. Quote, I know several Margis, and they are fine, committed people, the State Department official said. Sect spokesmen blame communists for spreading, quote, inaccurate and purposefully misleading statements about the organization. These two groups have a history of antagonism in India. Ananda Marga also blames communists for the April 30th daylight massacre of 17 of its nuns and monks in downtown Calcutta. The victims were stoned and stabbed to death and then piled in a heap and burned.
Continuing in a section of the article by Bernard Bauer entitled Disagreement with Communists. Indian police say that the massacre was caused by rumors that Ananda Marga was stealing children. The sect claims that it was an organized attack by the Communist Party. Whether to protect itself or, as its critics claim, to foster its own violence, the cult maintains a security branch known as VSS. That's V as in Victor. The VSS is the main, quote, violence-prone wing of Ananda Marga, unquote, and is responsible for a series of terrorist acts around the world in 1977 and 78, according to declassified CIA documents. At VSS camps in India, cultists are trained in the use of martial weapons, including knives and nunchukas, martial arts weapons, the U.S. State Department said. There are unconfirmed reports of VSS camps in California and New York, a department official said, quote, but I haven't seen any hard evidence of that, unquote. Jim Venezia, V-E-N-E-Z-I-A, treasurer secretary of the VSS National Office in Los Angeles, said all charges of terrorism are, quote, totally bogus, unquote. Venezia said the 70 VSS members in the United States act as a security force to keep order, unquote, during political demonstrations by Ananda Marga members. We don't carry arms, he said. We don't train people in any organized way, but we encourage that people should be prepared to defend themselves, unquote. Like their counterparts overseas, VSS members in the United States wear uniforms of gray shirts with epaulettes, khaki pants, and Australian bush hats, Venezia said. Many U.S. followers seem to be unaware of the charges of evil that critics say permeates the inner sanctum of the cult. It's kind of a schizophrenic group, said Josh Barron, B-A-R-A-N, who runs Sorting It Out, a counseling service in Berkeley for dropouts from cults. There are people that have been involved for years who don't know about that side of things at all, unquote. A former U.S. government official whose son belongs to the sect said that its good deeds are merely a cover for less noble purposes. Quote, despite its idealistic face in the United States, it's basically an organization dedicated to the overthrow of the basic institutions of the United States and the free world, unquote, he said. Like other sources, the former official who has studied Ananda Marga for years declined to be identified because he feared retaliation. Note the reticence to be identified on the part of Ananda Marga's critics here. That is worth taking note of here for our purposes, okay? Again, quoting that State Department official, quoting another former Margi. They, quote, they want to bring about a worldwide transformation of society headed under Ananda Marga principles, said Rabbi Yehuda Fine of New York City, an ex-member. They have the answer, unquote. They are fanatics, another cult member said. Another former cultist said, they will do anything, totally unpredictable. They will kill, and they will die, unquote. At the center of the maelstrom of controversy that swirls around Ananda Marga is the cult's 61-year-old guru, a former railway clerk whose Sanskrit name, Anandamurti, means embodiment of bliss, unquote. Sarkar spent part of his early manhood living with Subhas Chandra Bose, a radical Indian nationalist who recruited 90,000 soldiers to fight with Hitler and the Japanese against the Allies. I'm going to repeat that last sentence. Sarkar, now recall, this is Sarkar, who's the head of the and the founder of Ananda Marga. Sarkar spent part of his early manhood living with Subhas Chandra Bose, a radical Indian nationalist who recruited 90,000 soldiers to fight with Hitler and the Japanese against the Allies. In 1955, Sarkar founded his sect, blending yoga, meditation, and political dogma. The cult was exported to the United States in 1969, in an era when Indian gurus and religions were finding fertile ground among young people in search of alternative lifestyles. Today, there are branches in 38 cities. Precise membership figures are difficult to obtain. Ananda Marga claims 3 million members worldwide, with 20,000 in the United States. The State Department estimates there are only 400,000 members worldwide, with 5,000 in the United States. We tended to be hippies who were leaving drugs and going into meditation, unquote, said former member Karen Weisglass, a computer programmer at the University of California at Berkeley, who was among the first devotees in the country. We had a mantra we were supposed to say every morning to the light bulb in the bathroom, unquote. During the early 1970s, Ananda Marga signed up thousands of members in the United States. In India, however, crisis struck the organization. Rumors were circulating that Sarkar was ordering the executions of disloyal priests. Sarkar's wife, Uma, UMA, left her husband in October of 1971, saying it was, quote, impossible for me to be a silent spectator of inhuman, brutal, and senseless happenings, unquote. 2 months later, Sarkar was arrested and charged with murder. I landed in India the day he was arrested, unquote, recalled a former member who was sent to the subcontinent to study with Sarkar. A friend of mine met me at the airport and took me to Delhi, where a group of ex-teachers had gathered. One guy said that he personally trained people to kill, the ex-member said. He said there was a murder committee. I left the cult and never looked back, unquote. Sarkar's followers said that the murder charges were trumped up and that the guru was a victim of political persecution. They staged rallies in the United States and overseas and bought newspaper advertisements protesting Sarkar's innocence. After his acquittal on appeal in 1978, Sarkar embarked on a world tour of Ananda Marga centers. In 1979, defying the State Department ban, he tried to visit the Los Altos Hills Center. He was detained at the San Francisco International Airport and sent away, leaving behind hundreds of angry disciples who charged that their freedom of religion had been violated. Sarkar teaches his followers that the world is in a state of moral and political decay. Both capitalism and communism have failed miserably to meet the material and spiritual needs of mankind, he says. Hope lies only in a massive intellectual revolution, unquote, led by Ananda Marga. If that fails, however, a physical revolution, unquote, is inevitable. No problem of this world can be solved by means of the principle of nonviolence, unquote, Sarkar has written. Let me read that sentence again. This will be useful when we play a tape of some Ananda Marga people responding to this article on One Step Beyond. No problem of the world can be solved by means of the principle of nonviolence, Sarkar has written. One of the texts sold at the Los Altos Hills Center stresses that point. Any act of violent retaliation against tyranny and oppression is justified, unquote, one book says. Nityashudhanand Avaduta, the saffron-robed Indian monk who runs the Los Altos Hills Center, says that violence is not advocated at the six-week sessions he runs. He stresses the humanitarian side of the organization, which runs a food program for indigents in San Jose, and the Ananda Marga School for preschoolers situated near the center. The monk says that the guru's teachings have been misinterpreted. I would interrupt, recall that Jim Jones's People's Temple also had a great many humanitarian and charitable organizations stemming out from it, which served, among other things, to recruit people to the People's Temple. Continuing, the monk says that the guru's teachings have been misinterpreted. We don't support violence, he said, but when the capitalists exploit, naturally the patience of the people is gone. When the resentment becomes more and more, a chaotic situation comes, and that brings violence. As in other cults, life in Ananda Marga is highly regimented. Hours are spent each day in intense meditation. Followers consider the life unifying. Critics call it brainwashing. At its most intense levels, you become just basically lost, washed over with a very psychically pleasurable feeling, ex-disciple Fecho said. Rabbi Fine agrees. There is no doubt that I was in an altered, hypnotized state, he said. The techniques they teach are powerful, mind-altering techniques. Fine says he is now sure he was brainwashed. Otherwise, he said, he could not have belonged to a cult whose symbol includes a swastika, which spokesmen say stands for victory. Even though that has nothing to do with Hitler, the fact that I could sit down and put my hands on that swastika and swear an oath, Fine said. He called Ananda Marga, quote, a mass movement that included one extra item, a hypnotic, spiritual philosophy on top of it all. It scared me as a Jew when I thought of Nazi Germany. Before Niptuck reads you another article that appeared on the same page, a couple of points here we might go back to. Take note of the fact that this organization is apparently, according to certain ex-members, very much involved with mind control. And take note of the organization's symbol, okay? Its symbol consists of a six-pointed star, the Mogen David, the Jewish star, okay, the Star of David. It also has the rising sun. Okay, remember what Japan, Imperial Japan's symbol was, of course, the rising sun. It also has a swastika. Now, the swastika is an ancient occult symbol which appears in Indian religion, among other places. Also, American Indians have the swastika. It's worth noting that the Ananda Marga swastika is the Nazi swastika. It turns the opposite direction from the traditional occult symbol, which is sort of a symbol of the life cycle and of the universe. This, the Ananda Marga swastika is the Nazi swastika, which refers to essentially the imposition of man's will upon the natural cycle. So it is not the traditional occult symbol. It is, in fact, the Nazi swastika. And recall that is merged with not only the Jewish star, but also the rising sun of Japan. Recall the founder of this group, Mr. Sarkar, spent part of his early manhood with Subhas Chandra Bose. Now, he was the Japanese intelligence agent, the protege of elements of the patriotic societies, who we looked at earlier. And this particular, when a friend of mine contacted Bernard Bauer, the author of this article, the information about Subhas Chandra Bose recruiting 90,000 troops to fight with Hitler and the Japanese came from the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're going to talk about Subhas Chandra Bose here in a minute. But recall the terrorism and recall the fear of retaliation on behalf of certain critics of the Ananda Marga.
Okay, again, another article from that selfsame San Jose Mercury of August 15, 1982. This is also by Bernard Bauer, staff writer. It's headlined, Cult Guru Inspires Devotion and Seven Supreme Sacrifices. The subheading, a secret leader's murder conviction was overturned, but his conduct has drawn scrutiny, accusations. To his devout followers, Prabhat Ranjan Sarkar is a god. Quote, I was searching for my guru for years. In Ananda Marga, I do not have to search anymore, said a 28-year-old Trinidad man who trained recently at the Los Altos Hills Center. It is a miracle. Unquote. To others, the guru of Ananda Marga is Satan. Nawal Kishore, K-I-S-H-O-R-E, a former high-ranking monk, wrote in 1975 that Sarkar is, quote, a perverted megalomaniac, whose, quote, murder squads tied disloyal members to trees and stabbed them to death. Quote, it is a fact that, under the guise of spiritual practices, Sarkar and his associates have been indulging in quite heinous crimes, unquote, says a declassified but heavily censored 1980 CIA document. Cult critics say that Sarkar runs his organization as a merciless autocracy and inspires unthinking loyalty in his followers. He was arrested in 1971 after Indian law enforcement agencies uncovered an alleged plot to murder 18 defectors. Sarkar and several followers were charged with six murders, as well as kidnapping and weapons possession. From the outset, his followers mounted a long campaign aimed at winning the guru's release. Seven disciples eventually burned themselves to death in protest. One self-immolation occurred in the United States. with others in Europe, India, and the Philippines, according to a sect manifesto. Quote, it was seen as a great sacrifice, said ex-member Rabbi Yehuda Fine of New York City. These people were doing the ultimate sacrifice. That's what you were told. Bizarre claims about the sect persisted through the 1970s. Quote, it became a frequent practice for the Anandamurti, Sarkar, sitting on a chair with a rod in his hand to chastise errant monks, all of them stripped naked, ex-member Kishore wrote. He used to cane them one by one mercilessly. The Margis were dismayed to find that while some of them got punishments, others continued to enjoy his confidence, particularly those who had brought young boys for the perverted satisfaction of Anandamurti, unquote. A spokesman for Ananda Marga's national office in Denver called the allegations about Sarkar's behavior, quote, a complete sham. I doubt you would find 1% of truth in them, unquote. In 1976, Sarkar and four co-defendants were found guilty of murder and conspiracy to murder and sentenced to life in prison. The conviction was overturned on appeal 2 years later when a higher court ruled that the testimony of the prosecution's main witness had not been sufficiently corroborated. Still, parents of current members say they are terrified by what seems to be a blind allegiance to the guru. Quote, I don't think anyone would have the drive on their own to go out and burn themselves, one father said. There's some kind of mind control that makes them act as automatons. Okay, so again, the distinction being made here was these are allegations about the cult itself. Now, the Los Altos Hills branch has come under no accusations, and that was stress was made several times in the course of the article, but that the allegations about Subhash Chandra Bose's follower, Sarkar, are many and various and fairly unsavory. But of course it's the political content as well as just the ideological content that we want to talk about, and that's what we're going to be concentrating on next.
Now, it's worth noting here that what we have are people who are ostensibly the representatives and inheritors of a transcendental religious tradition who seem remarkably preoccupied with the here and now. Involvement in partisan politics, such as anti-communism, is not traditional with the practitioners of transcendental religion, of which yoga and other similar meditative disciplines they would fall into that category. Okay, and yet the Margis seem curiously preoccupied with the here and now, altogether rooted in the temporal reign, which seems a little unusual for people of their ongoing religious tradition. Now, recall that Sarkar spent portions of his young manhood with Subhash Chandra Bose, the Japanese intelligence agent, protege of the secret societies that we looked at before, along with his mentor and the man who gave him his name, or from whom he took his name, Rash Bihari Bose. And recall also that, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, quoted in that article, Subhash Chandra Bose recruited 90,000 troops to fight not only on behalf of the Japanese, but also on behalf of Hitler in World War II. Recall the Nazi swastika that is part of the Ananda Marga symbol. Now, we're going to read you from a book now, which is going to document connections of Subhash Chandra Bose not only to the Japanese, but also to the Third Reich. We're going to read you now from a book called Spies and Traitors of World War II. That was authored by a man named Kurt Singer, S-I-N-G-E-R, and it's copyrighted in 1945. It's hardcover edition by Prentice Hall, Incorporated. Okay, so this is right after the end of World War II. Of Subhash Chandra Bose, Singer writes as follows in Spies and Traitors of World War II. History has shown that a strong people can afford to be merciful even to its direst enemies. Bose was beyond doubt an incorrigible. In 1934 and 5, he was busy in Berlin, Vienna, and Rome. He met Hitler and Mussolini. He listened carefully and proceeded with the utmost caution, but he followed in the footsteps of his master and wrote his Mein Kampf, which he entitled India's Struggle. He expressed hearty approval of Mussolini's carnage in Ethiopia. He made Indians who volunteered to fight with Emperor Haile Selassie's troops the butt of furious vituperation. As a climax to his European jaunt, he founded the German Indian Society. One of the honorary directors of the new club was none other than Admiral Walter Wilhelm Canaris. Canaris, by the way, was the head of the Abwehr, German military intelligence at that time. Bose, that's an interjection. Continuing with the text, Bose was granted a long interview with that gentleman, who expressed his warm friendliness toward Bose's dream of an independent India. In Berlin, Bose altered many of his ideas. He had completely dropped his pro-Russian feelings. Now he became race-conscious. A stately figure in his oriental robes, he went on conducted tours through Berlin. His guide was an attractive maiden of the Hitler Youth named Ingeborg. She showed him the later bombed-out Pergamon Museum, the Staatsoper, the Potsdam Drive. They conversed on the Nazi theory of the superiority of the Aryan race. India, after all, was the cradle of the Aryan race. Bose was well pleased with this idea. India rightly belonged to the Aryan Axis group of nations. It was a new slogan and would speed the struggle for freedom. Of course, the Nordic maiden who introduced him to the idea had received instructions from Canaris on the topics on which to touch. But that scarcely mattered. The Nazis put him on the air. Bose addressed the Orient from radio stations in Zeissen and Königswusterhausen. He roundly condemned Great Britain and announced the formation of the Aryan Axis. He extended friendship to Japan. And so again, we have connections here between Subhas Chandra Bose with Hitler and Mussolini with the Abwehr, all of this before World War II. He's conducting propaganda broadcasts now on behalf of the Third Reich. Recall the Ananda Marga symbol with the rising sun of Japan and the Nazi swastika.
Going on, then in 1939, the war started. Bose promptly made a journey to Berlin, where he met Goebbels and the Grand Mufti again. We'll talk about the Grand Mufti some more in a moment. His next steps were dictated by the Canaris office. He was to fight against British control in India and against the influence of Gandhi. You remember, of course, the reference earlier in the broadcast to their opposition to principles of nonviolence. And, of course, Gandhi was the leading advocate of nonviolence in the Indian struggle for independence.
Worth noting that initially Subhas Chandra Bose was an ally and follower of Gandhi's, but he broke with Gandhi specifically over the question of violence.
Gandhi, the great prophet, emphasized that he had no grievances against the British people, but only against their government. He ardently opposed Japan's designs on India and warned Japan that she was not to think of profiting from a British defeat. But Bose harangued his followers in another vein. Quote, "The Axis will give us independence. Let us join with Japan in chasing the British out of India." In 1943, Bose met dictator Hideki Tojo in Tokyo. A Japanese submarine then brought him to the site of Britain's most humiliating defeat, Singapore. Bose recruited his army, raised the flag of Free India. He concluded alliances with other Quislings in Thailand and Burma. On to Delhi was still his slogan. He referred to himself as the savior of India. Quote, "I, your leader, have millions of pounds of rice ready to be shipped to famine-stricken India, but the British, our implacable and pitiless enemies, have stopped the shipment. They would rather let you starve than accept the succor which is contributed by our friends and allies in Japan." Bose spoke long and loud. He circulated incendiary pamphlets, but all in vain. Traitors are despised by their fellow countrymen. Gandhi earnestly warned against his hypocrisy, and Gandhi's warning was heeded. In Bose's person, the Japanese and German secret services were given the cold shoulder. And there's a footnote that mentions Bose died suddenly in 1945 and never saw the end of the war. This is significant for a variety of reasons. Most significant, the fact that he shared lodgings with Sarkar, and that he obviously was still in the flush of his fascist period when he was in contact with Sarkar, since he never got a chance to be rehabilitated, as so many of our other fascist friends seem to be.
Well, again, the point can't be stressed too strongly that Bose was an Axis intelligence agent when Sarkar was living with him. Ask yourself whether an intelligence agent would have somebody living with him and presumably having access to his activities, whom he either didn't trust, or ask if he would even have a neutral person living with him. So again, when Sarkar is living with Subhas Chandra Bose, Bose is fraternizing and working on behalf of the likes of Hitler, Goebbels, and so forth. Also, it's worth noting, I think, that the Nazis were very skillful in utilizing nationalist sentiments, in particular nationalists, many of them quite sincere, at least to begin with, in many of the areas of the various empires that existed at that time, Britain in particular. There's a reference here to a fellow named the Grand Mufti. That fellow's name is Haj Amin al-Husseini. He was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and the spiritual leader of all Palestinian Muslims. He also was a major in the SS, and we've taken a look at connections between some of his followers and the U.S. intelligence apparatus, and specifically the involvement of the son of one of his top followers in the 1972 Olympics massacre in Munich, Germany. So, again, we have these threads which are continuous to this day.
I begin from January of 1985, although I'm not going to take time to read them. Some of the references that we used in For the Record program number 1020 about some of the Nazi connections to yoga. Again, I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing yoga as Nazis, but talking about Baba Ramdev, very close to Narendra Modi and the BJP and the RSS, from the New York Times Magazine of July 29th of 2018, by Robert F. Worth, Baba Ramdev's Holy War, skipping down. Dozens of modern Ashtanga yoga postures are similar or identical to those found in a gymnastic routine introduced to India by the British in the first decades of the 20th century and originally developed by a Danish fitness instructor named Niels Buch, B-U-K-H, who later became notorious for his pro-Nazi sympathies. And from his Niels Buch's Wikipedia account, his system of exercise became highly popular in Germany, and in 1933, Buch publicly expressed his allegiance to the National Socialist cause and its aim of improving the health of the Aryan race through gymnastics. This made Buch unpopular in Denmark. And from the Yoga Journal, Nazi leaders fascinated by yoga. From the Yoga Journal of February 24th of 2012. This about a book called Yoga in National Socialism by a writer named Matthias Tietke. And there is a Daily Mail article, a characteristic of Daily Mail headline, "Wie Haves of Making You Relax, How SS Recommended Yoga to Death Camp Guards as a Good Way to De-Stress," by Alan Hall, from the Daily Mail of February 22nd of 2012. It was seized on by race experts in the party as being the pursuit of, quote, Aryan, unquote, people. Jakob Wilhelm Hauer, H-A-U-E-R, an SS captain and yoga expert who influenced his chief Himmler and convinced him that yoga can internally arm us and prepare us for the forthcoming battles. Himmler, obsessed as he was with hocus-pocus race theories and mysticism relating to his SS supermen, carried around a German copy of the Bhagavad Gita with him wherever he went. He regarded the ancient Sanskrit epic as having a blueprint for cruelty and terror, using it, said Tietke, to ultimately justify the Holocaust. He wrote, he identified himself and the SS with the old Indian Kshatriya caste and its publicized attitude of unscrupulous killing for one's, quote, higher purpose, unquote. And again, is there some kind of underground-like influence within Ananda Marga? I think that is something that is worth asking. I also wonder about the possibility of Subhas Chandra Bose and historical revisionism along the lines of what we have examined in some of our past discussions of Serpent's Walk. I'm wondering if perhaps fascism and the Axis in World War II will be politically rehabilitated in some people's minds as an anti-colonial liberation entity. That certainly was the focal point of an article in the Journal for Historical Review. That is the publication of the Institute for Historical Review, a Holocaust revisionist journal and the Holocaust Revisionist Institution that was financed by the Liberty Lobby and the late Willis Carto in their volume 3, number 4 from the winter of 1982. There is an article by Ron John Bora, B-O-R-R-A, that basically suggests that it was not Gandhi, but Subhas Chandra Bose, who was responsible for the liberation of India. And the interesting that there may be no connection between this source cited by Ron John Bora and, in fact, Sekhat Chakraborty. He is Sekhat Chakraborty, is a Bengali-American, Chief Justice P.B. Chakraborty of the Calcutta High Court. Different spelling, C-H-A-K-R-A-B-A-R-T-Y. Sekhat Chakraborty spells his name T-I. There may not be a connection, perhaps. That is a common Bengali name, I don't know. On the other hand, the author Ron John Bora has a history of work not only with the Voice of America, which has strong links to elements of U.S. intelligence, but also wrote for the Washington Times. The Washington Times is run by the Moon Organization, which, as we have looked at in numerous programs, including the aforementioned AFA-7, and in For the Record program number 970, appears to be an extension of the Japanese patriotic and ultranationalist societies through the decades and around the world. Subhas Chandra Bose was networked with the most prominent of those patriotic and ultranationalist societies, the Black Dragon Society and its head Mitsuru Toyama, as we looked at in two programs ago. We looked at that in AFA program number 7 and in For the Record program number 1066. This article titled Subhas Chandra Bose, The Indian National Army and the War of India's Liberation, again by a guy named Ron John Bora. He passed away some years ago, who wrote for the Washington Times, owned by the Moon Organization, attributes India's liberation not to Mahatma Gandhi, assassinated, by the way, by the BJP, or by the RSS, I should say. The BJP is an extension of the RSS. But this cites Chief Justice P.B. Chakraborty of Calcutta High Court, who had also served as the acting governor of West Bengal in India, as the source for the alleged comment by Clement Attlee that, no, it was not Gandhi, but Subhas Chandra Bose, who was responsible for the British leaving India. Again, that may be a very common Bengali name, and there may be no link whatsoever between this fellow and the family of Sekhat Chakraborty. Sekhat Chakraborty spells his name with an I at the end. This is with a Y. Whether there is the possibility of transliteration, I don't know. But it is certainly something worth contemplating. Again, I think with the historical revisionism that is going on around the world at this point, I do think it is worth contemplating whether perhaps Subhas Chandra Bose is going to be rehabilitated and politically reincarnated as a struggler for independence. Certainly, when you see someone like Sekhat Chakraborty, who is the driving force behind AOC, who is being presented by our media as the face of the Democratic Party. She has been in office roughly 3 months, and yet she dominates the news. And as I pointed out in our long series of interviews with Jim DiGenio, beginning with 1,031, running through 1,036, with the exception of 1,039, during which technical problems prevented doing a telephone interview. I noted as one, perhaps the most important element of that book, the role of the media in helping to realize what was a coup d'etat, the use of violent force in our political process by the intelligence community and the far right. And it is that same media establishment that is not talking about the moderate Democrats who were responsible for recapturing Congress from the Republicans. They're talking about Ilhan Omar, they're talking about Bernie Sanders, and they are talking about AOC. This is a media construct. I also think it is worth contemplating, and we will be going into this at some length. In the not-too-distant future, there is a series that I will be doing about a very, very, very important book called Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine. It is subtitled The Secret Military History of the Internet, and in there it talks about the genesis of the Internet. And the Internet itself is not some wonderful creation designed to bring the world to your doorstep and to inform you about everything that is going on in the world around you. The Internet was designed as an information weapon. And specifically, the goal of the Internet was counterinsurgency. We'll go into that at a greater length. And it was part of an overlapping series of DARPA projects, including primarily something called Project Agile, that also produced Agent Orange in Vietnam. I have noted in connection with AOC that she is very much a creature of social media. It is a safe bet that while she was developing, or while the basis for her political career was forming, this was being discussed online and through social media. I would note that the Cambridge Analytica team has been reassembled for Trump's 2020 campaign under the guidance of a guy named Brad Parscale, or Parscale perhaps, so P-A-R-S-C-A-L-E. I think it is a safe bet that the AIs that are scouring social media on behalf of Cambridge Analytica Redux, we might call it, were aware of the genesis of AOC early on. And from the get-go, I was struck by how perfect she is from the standpoint of the Republicans. She's everything they want. The bigotry against people of Latin extraction is more or less formal in the Republican Party. She is a Latina. She brands herself as a socialist. And even though she basically is a baby, she still has breast milk on her breath. She has become, because of the media, the same media that Deep Sixed Jim Garrison's investigation have presented AOC as the face of the Democratic Party. We have not heard about the moderate Democrats who retook Congress from the Republicans in the 2018 midterm elections. As I've noted in other programs in this series, there have been a number of serious missteps by Team AOC, so to speak, with people like Jeffrey Sachs, who was arguably the main architect of the economic disaster that sent Russia back to the Stone Age and that spawned the oligarch system that bedevils the many of the former Soviet republics, including Russia to this day, being a top economic advisor to Bernie Sanders and now to AOC. One wonders to what extent some of those missteps have resulted from Jeffrey Sachs blowing in her ear. Again, I wonder about Subhas Chandra Bose and the possibility of a serpent's walk revisionism of the history of the Axis and World War II, with the Axis being presented as an anti-colonial effort, blah, blah, blah. Certainly the article from the Institute for Historical Review by Ron John Bora, who wrote for the Washington Times, has presented Subhas Chandra Bose, not Mahatma Gandhi, as the driving force behind the liberation of India. And this from an organization that is really more or less out front about its revisionism and, as at times, outright denial of the Holocaust. One of the things I wonder about, and this will be sort of a concluding element for this series, in the book General Walker and the Murder of President Kennedy. President Kennedy, we've been talking about Jim Garrison's investigation. This is by Jeffrey Caulfield, C-A-U-F-I-E-L-D, published in hardcover by the Moreland Press. We talked about this at great length in For the Record Program 971. It is a very important book, and yet also one that is sorely in need of handicapping. It dismisses in a very off-putting tone any involvement of the intelligence community in the assassination of JFK, but it does go into great length about the role of Nazis at the operational level in New Orleans of the JFK assassination. And these were the people that Jim Garrison was investigating. From General Walker and the Murder of President Kennedy by Jeffrey Caulfield, Garrison did not provide an explanation for all of David Ferry's notes' subject matter. However, he did know the meaning of flying Baragona, B-A-R-A-G-O-N-A, in the beach, B-E-E-C-H. Beach refers to the model of Ferry's airplane, a beach craft. Baragona was a Nazi from Fort Sill. Garrison also obtained a transcript of a letter written by Ferry to Baragona. Next to Baragona's name, Garrison wrote, quote, note, Baragona is important, unquote. The letter had been sent to Garrison by Glenn Pinchback, and a carbon copy was sent to Mendel Rivers, a congressman from Georgia. Pinchback worked in the operations command at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where he intercepted mail. In the letter, Ferry shared his dream of the reunification of Germany and living in a world where all the currency was in Deutschmarks. David Ferry, by the way, as we looked at in our series of Jim DiGiamio, the primary focal point of Jim Garrison's investigation before his quote-unquote suicide, after which Clay Shaw became the primary focal point. Pinchback's summation of the Ferry letter described, quote, a neo-Nazi plot to enslave America in the name of anti-communism, unquote, and, quote, a neo-Nazi plot gargantuan in scope, unquote. The Ferry letter spoke of the need to kill all the Kennedys and Martin Luther King, Jr. Pinchback also reportedly obtained a letter from David Ferry to Baragona, confessing his role in the assassination of Robert Gehrig, G-E-H-R-I-G, who was a Nazi and Fort Sill soldier. The only other place I have ever seen or encountered the notion of using anti-communism as a vehicle for conquering America was in AFA program number 37 that I did in the late summer and fall of 1992. And yet Glenn Pinchback, an officer at Fort Sill, was talking about this in the early 1960s. Consider this, if one is going to use anti-communism as a vehicle for enslaving America, one cannot do that unless you have communists. And is this where elements, like so many of these fascist elements, that are grouped around Bernie Sanders, AOC, and people we've spoken about in this series, and also in For the Record 953, is that the reason they are there? Certainly we are looking at, in my opinion anyway, at yet another attempt, this has been going on for decades, to infiltrate and drive the Democratic Party so far to the left that it will become unpalatable to a significant number of American voters, 69% of whom, by the way, are non-Hispanic whites, most of whom are heterosexual and did not move here from somewhere else. Consider that. This concludes For the Record program number 1068, Socialists for Trump and Hitler, Part 8. This is being recorded on April 9th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.